It is the Mike Show. It's the Monday edition of the program. We have Bruce Montgomery, who produces a podcast called Road to Retail. And we're going to talk with Bruce about his podcast and what you guys focus on and feature. And then we also have Chris Sadler. Chris, no stranger to me. He is the founder and are you president, CEO? How do you identify yourself?
Manager.
Okay.
That's just the official term. I mean, you know, what the heck?
Yeah. Grand Poobah of Three Roads Brewing and Ballad Brewing. Chris is one of my clients, and now I work with Chris doing events for Three Roads and Ballad Brewing. So I'm pretty familiar with the story, but a lot of folks, you know, they hear our talking points, they hear our ads, they see our events. They've been to the tap room where they tried our beer, but we want to find out specifically from Chris how it all developed and how it got started. And then we're going to talk about building successful brands. That's all coming up in this segment. And Bruce, I'm immediately thinking, yeah, this might take more than 10 minutes. I mean,
again, you're the boss, Mike. Thank you so much for bringing me on today to speak with you and Chris about what goes on in the emerging brand world. And I'm a big fan of Chris's operation, and I continue to submit my resume as taste tester, and it keeps getting rejected. So I don't know why.
Mike, I don't think we've actually seen that that application, Bruce. That must be the problem. Are you sending it to the right address?
Well, you know, I'm sort of from the Amish community from a technology standpoint, so it's probably going to your spam filter.
Well, as long as you keep coming in and tasting.
Oop, Chris, you're muted.
Yeah, Chris, you muted your mic.
I must have hit the thing. You've got the official taste tester moniker.
I love it. That comes with a t-shirt and a parking place. Excellent.
That's exactly right.
We got plenty of those. Well, thank you guys for joining us on the program. We really appreciate it. Chris, let's talk about the Three Roads story.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a thumbnail pretty quickly about, basically we formed in 2017 in Farmville, Virginia. We opened our doors September 15th, soft opening. I think October 21 was our hard opening. And realistically, it started as there's six of us that started the brewery, and it was as much an economic development opportunity or objective as anything else. You know, Farmville is a two college town, and it seemed to us that they were doing everything they could to avoid being a college town. And we started the brewery as much as anything to prove that, you know, that there was room in the market for bars, restaurants, and the like, and to enhance the entertainment offering in the market. And beer was, you know, I have not met a beer I didn't like. And so it seemed a natural, and it was all the rage at that point in time. And, you know, we were towards the end of the, let's call it the craft brewery revolution, you know, and so Farmville was wonderful. We found a great space in the old, Southern States building, an old tobacco prizery. You know, they've converted to loft apartments up above. And so we've got the basement area. We've got a great beer garden. The objective was to brew great beer, which I think we do, and to have a pub-like atmosphere where you can really basically, you know, all walks of life come together in the tap room. And that was the objective. And the second step of that is about a year or so into that, Ashley Kirshner with DLA, which is the Downtown Lynchburg Association, you know, approached us. One of the founders is a friend of hers, and they had visited the tap room, and she was laudatory and said, "Hey, would you think about doing a tap room in Lynchburg?" And we said, "Well, heck yeah, we would." And that's where the tail started to wag the dog. And now we've got a big tap room, and the founding brewer, David Steves, who is a great brewer, suggested that if we were going to build another one, that we build a big one. And so we've now got a big brewer. We've got brewing a hell of a lot of beer. And we love Lynchburg, and Lynchburg is growing, and we've been a part of that town. I love that that space. I mean, it's an old auto dealership from the 30s or 40s, and or maybe even before that. We've got a mural of the old dealership, you know, in one of the rooms in the tap room. But that's, you know, been a lot of fun there too, and you know, that has spurred us to push hard into branding and into distribution, which takes us into a whole new realm. And that's kind of how Mike and I got, or Bruce, I'm sorry, Bruce and I got together, is talking about branding and how to build a brand. And, you know, I've had the benefit of talking to Bruce on many occasions, and also the benefit of seeing these questions. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that you're, you know, that you work on is stuff that as you start a business, you don't really think about. I mean, one of the questions I think you wanted to talk about is how important is differentiation? Well, when I started, we were different because we were the only tap room in the market. That was it. Now we have to think about how do we differentiate ourselves from all the other brands on the shelves and all. And I think that's where it really starts to play in, is when you try to expand your marketing to more than just your tap room. Your tap room is local. People come there because they like the feel, they like the sound, they like the beer, you know, but at some point, you know, everybody's got good beer. So how do you differentiate yourself from the other guys that have good beer?
And let's talk about that, Chris, as far as from the manufacturing point of view, because you touched on this in this, the earlier part of the segment, about how Lynchburg, you build it bigger. When you go to not only the tap room, but you look back in the brewery, it is a much bigger operation. It is a manufacturing plant for sure. Let's talk about the manufacturing aspect. Let's talk about the distribution aspect, and then how do you differentiate? How do you make a better beer, or a beer that folks are going to enjoy, not just in the tap room, but out in the community where they're literally going to seek it out and find either another establishment or find a convenience store or a grocery store that carries it?
Well, that's a $64,000 question. How do you convince people to do that? What is the story that you tell? Branding is more, it's that you've got to have, people need to have a reason to try your brand. They need to, you know, from all that I read and all the talk and all of them, and that, you know, you need to be aligned with their value system in some way, shape, or form. So it's more than just the beer. I've heard it said many times before, is you got to get to a certain level of beer. You've got to have a certain quality. But beyond that, it's really all, you know, promotion and marketing and branding. The manufacturing, you know, we now have significant capacity, and we are working hard to fill that capacity. And to fill that capacity really just means we need to sell more beer through distribution. And so I see it as, you got your tap rooms, which are your local establishments. They are part of who you are. And the next step is, how do you then convey that to somebody who may never visit the tap room?
Well, and then my question is, when, you know, how do you approach then the retailers, the convenience stores, the grocery stores? How do you convince them to carry your brands?
Well, it starts off, I mean, we started locally, and so that's, you know, that's relatively easy from a sales pitch standpoint. It's, hey, we're right down the street, you know, we're your local brewery. And there is a general, what would I say, predisposition to want to, you know, buy local. And so that is a big help. And then as you expand those circles, it becomes more difficult. How do you, you know, one, we can point to our sales locally and say, oh, God, you know, we're selling like hotcakes in XYZ retailer. That's always a good story. But then what differentiates you? How do I get my customer? How do I get your customer into your store to buy my beer? You know, that's, I think, the hard part is, you know, and it was kind of scary. The first distribution we did was we did it, you know, on our own, so to speak. I mean, that's not legal in Virginia, but it was, for all intents and purposes, we were distributing our own beer, and that's all the beer that our distributor was distributing. And you know, first sale to a retailer, you know, we're jumping up and down, we're all excited. Then you realize that you've got to bring the customer into that store to then buy that beer from the retailer, and so your job has really just begun. And that's what we're playing with right now, is how do we, you know, market essentially, you know, on two levels, right? We want to bring people into the tap room, and then we also want to sell beer to people in, you know, in markets that have really, you know, have never been to our tap room. So, you
absolutely,
know, Northern Virginia, you know, the beaches, whatever. How do you? And that's what we're toying with, and we've got a big launch coming up that I think will be very interesting to see how that all works.
Yeah. So Mike, this is sort of how I crossed paths with Chris on Road to Retail. My co-founder, Tracy Priest, and I, we've been in sales and marketing and consumer packaged goods since the early 90s. And during COVID, Tracy called up and said, "Do you have any time?" And I said, "Dude, I got plenty of time right now. No one's doing anything." So we started focusing in on small challenger and emerging brands and said, you know, these folks all sort of have the same challenges and initial questions. And I crossed paths with, so, you know, our podcast, Road to Retail, we're on, you know, we're not as big as the Mike Show, but, you know, out on Spotify and YouTube and Apple Podcasts. And we interview founders, leaders. We interview investors who invest in these emerging brands. We invest in retailer, or we interview retailers. You know, what are you looking for in an emerging brand? And I stumbled into Chris because I saw an article about how Three Roads was starting to get into stores, which is what I've been doing the majority of my career. And I was already a fan of their product. So I left a note at the Lynchburg Tap Room and said, "Hey, if you guys ever want to talk about this, I'd be glad to spend some time with you." And Chris and his team have been very eager listeners, and it's complex. And, you know, Chris can talk about the multi-tiered, archaic, in my view, distribution system. But in terms of generating that brand awareness and then driving trial, because once you get into a retailer, there's something called the hurdle rate, the velocity hurdle rate. What does that mean, Bruce? It means every retailer has a different metric or evaluation point, and you need to be selling a certain number of units or a certain number of dollars per store per week. And usually in every set in a store, that's, it's called a category, whether it's beer or cookies or laundry detergent. And each of those buyers assigned to the category, their shelf space is an open competition every day. And usually the top 80% of SKUs, which are the individual sizes of anything, again, beer, Advil, a 12 count is different from a 24 to a 50. You know, the top 80% of SKUs in a category are usually considered safe, and the bottom 20 are vulnerable to being discontinued or replaced. So most retailers will give you 6 to 9 months to be hitting hurdle rate. And you've got to do everything in your power to get there, because you generally won't get a second at bat with a retailer if you get thrown out. So as Chris was saying, you know, marketing is, it's about a lot more than just having a fancy logo. I mean, sometimes your packaging can work against you because it looks too similar to everything else, right?
Right.
So
right.
When you hold something in your hand, it can look beautiful and you're like, "Man, this is awesome." But until you go put it in your category set with all your competitors, you may look up and go, "Damn, everybody's orange."
Yeah.
Or no one can read my logo. Because when you have a person who walks into the beer cave at the XYZ store, you know, unless they're really committed to you, they want to find it fast. Most shoppers are lazy, and most shoppers in every category have what's called the evoked set. What does that mean? It means I want to go get beer today. And in your mind, pop probably 2 or 3 brands. And you might have a favorite. But if I'm looking for N150, which I always am, from Chris's shop, if I can't find that, what do I default to? So the first real hurdle is to elbow your way into as many consumers' evoked set as possible. So it goes brand awareness, brand preference, to brand insistence. And when you hit that last one, you're really cooking then.
Bruce, I have a question that I ask all of my clients when I'm doing an initial consultation. And the first question is, what is the number one search engine? And most people will say Google or Bing or this or that. And no, it's not. That's incorrect. The number one search engine is the human brain. So if you know the brand, if you know the product, if you like the product, and it could be anything. It could be, I have a blowout. I'm in this part of town. I know who to call to come and help me with this. My car broke down. I have a particular mechanic that I choose. I don't need to go on Google to determine where I'm going to take my vehicle. I have my favorite brand. When I go into Three Roads or I'm out and about and I buy a Three Roads beer, I love the High Bridge. That's my favorite. So to your point as well, if that's not available, then I'm going to go to whatever's closest, the next brand down my short list.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Mike, and that's a great point. I mean, people's first search engine is their own personal experiences.
Yeah.
It's like, why would I ever eat there again? I felt terrible after I ate there. So, yeah. And then the second one I'd say that's very powerful is your trusted, friends and family. Hey, Chris, I need new tires and I just moved here. Where do you go? Right. If he tells me XYZ, I'm probably going to go there first. And if I have a good experience, they move to lead off in my batting order the next time. But if I'm striking out, or in my case, have no friends, then yeah, I'm probably going to Google.
Well, I'll be your friend, Bruce. So when we invite folks to come to the tap room, either through an event or a festival or just through advertising, we know that they're going to have a great experience. We know that they're going to really enjoy the atmosphere. We know that they're going to really enjoy the beer. Once we've got them, and we hear this more times than not, this is the first time I've been here. I didn't hear about this place until so-and-so told me about it, or until I saw your event. And once folks come in and once they experience it for the first time, they're hooked and they come back again and again and again. What's the metric, Bruce, for that? Or what,
So Mike, you're uncorking MBA level class in marketing. So what you're talking about, the equation goes like this. You have to drive awareness. Awareness drives trial. Mm-hmm. Trial drives repeat. And after you have repeat and you hit conversion, where that you become brand used most often. So you have to fill, everyone refers to the sales funnel. I hate the analogy, but it works. You have to do what you can efficiently to get the awareness out there to drive as much trial as possible. And then the product needs to deliver, right? Because most people, even if they come in and try, they're going to give you the old thing. You only get one chance to make a first impression. In Chris's case, you want a good environment where, you feel like you can have fun. The beer's cold. It tastes great. You're probably going to come back. If you go in and, there's some like lunatic with his 9 pet pit bulls, like licking their chops, trying to get you, and the beer's flat, you're like, yeah, I don't need that again.
That's so awesome.
every day for a small brand or a company, it's like a performance, right? It's got to be good. Every day is a performance. I heard an analogy once about Disney World and a Disney executive. This is years ago. And the lady said, she goes, every day at Disney World is the best day of somebody's life, because many families can't afford to go there multiple times. They go once.
No, that is a great analogy as well. Chris, let's talk about this and let's kind of combine these two. Challenges of running a small emerging challenger brand or business, plus, what does the founder or the founding organization folks need to consider as they're building out the team, as they're building the brand? What do you need to do?
Well, that's I'd like to tell you. I wish I knew. I mean, basically, I'm a do-it-yourself kind of guy. And I mean, I like to get advice and talk to people that know more than I do. But at the end of the day, you got to do it yourself for the most part. You can't abdicate it. You can certainly get consultation and the like, but it's a trial by fire, and it's a trial and error sort of an experience, right? I mean, you start off small And basically you're trying to get beer through the taps in your tap room. And that's your first line. You know, that's how you determine whether you're successful or not. Do people like my beer? Is the environment what they want it to be? And then you grow it. And that's when you start to worry about social media and branding and how do I become, you know, how do I get more people aware of my brand? And now, you know, the real hard part is how do I get more people aware of my brand outside of my home markets, right? For sake of discussion, Farmville and Lynchburg and Danville are relatively easy because we're there. Mm-hmm. You know, Northern Virginia, Richmond's a very competitive market, and they're having, you know, we're bumping into lots of headwinds in that market just because we're not from Richmond per se. You know, you go to the beaches, et cetera. All of those are difficult. You know, you just take toehold after toehold. And I like your analogy or your funnel, Bruce, in the sense is, I mean, really what that brought me back to is awareness is what we've got to, we've really got to spend a lot of time. And that's, we're still at the awareness step. And then
the other thing, I'm sorry, Chris.
I said the other piece that I think is really important is the differentiation, because I love my packaging. I mean, I am partial to it. I think it's great. You know, I like where it came from, which is an interesting story in itself. But if it's sitting on a shelf, it's not easy for me to find it. And I know it. You know, I know it like the back of my hand. And so, you know, there is some need to somehow make it pop, differentiate ourselves in some way, shape, or form. So we went to law. So basically, as we started, we were not distributing, we're not canning, we're not doing anything, but we wanted posters of our beers. And so I went to Longwood University's design lab. So anybody going into graphic arts or whatever was basically had to run through this class that is supposed to mimic or look like, you know, the real market, right? And so five kids did five different labels, and I kept all the original labels, but this one gal, her name is Rachel Hansen, did the fog light, and she did it in the purple, blue, you know, the kind of the psychedelic sorts of colors. You can see it right there. That's exact. And so I liked her coloration. And so she took over the rest of the labels and colored them, you know, so the hybrid is the same hybrid we had. The top down blonde is the same top down blonde. I can't remember the five of them. It was N150, hybrid chalice, fog light, top down blonde. Those were our, those were our flagships. And then there was another one called we had a red ale or something that didn't quite make it through the poster phase. It did not come into the flagship genre. And we're coming out with a new beer called Destination, and it's going to be very interesting because the label is completely different. I think it's really clean, and I think we're going to put a lot of effort in taking the game up a couple of notches as it relates to promotions, advertising, graphic arts, the look of the can, all of that stuff.
So, Mike, one of the things Chris said that's super interesting and important for any of the brands that Tracy and I have seen is that if you're small, the first thing you need to do is project out and defend your home markets. You know, there are conferences. There's one called Expo West, which is held each year out in Anaheim for 3 days. And it's like Woodstock for small, emerging, natural, organic brands. I mean, it's massive. It's overwhelming. But we'll talk to brands and they're like, hey, I talked to so-and-so retailer from Phoenix and they're willing to put me in. And I'm like, but you're a New England-based snack company. Why would you do that? No one's heard of you. You don't have the marketing dollars to win there. So if you think about it in a series of like concentric circles, you know, in our instance here in Lynchburg, start in Lynchburg. And then if you can, you know, go to Roanoke, get up to Charlottesville. Because like Chris says, you get into Richmond, no one's heard of you. You go to Virginia Beach. It's not that you can't win, but it's going to be tougher, riskier, and probably a lot more expensive.
That's exactly right. And the concentric circles, I think whether it's just natural but it was clear to me at the very outset that first we needed to own Farmville and then we had to own Lynchburg. And we really, you know, And that's where the beer's the freshest, and that's where you've got some pull as to being local. Then hopefully you've built a reputation that, you know, you can start to grow those circles wider and wider and wider and start to head into the farm, the Richmonds, and at least people will have, you know, you'll have some customers that know who you are.
And Mike, some of the things that you're doing with Chris's team are super important to building a brand. I mean, Chris, I've only been to the Lynchburg facility. I've been accused of loitering at certain times when I'm there a lot.
Yeah, but we never kicked you out.
Right? No, not yet. But it you know, it feels good. It's nice. It's a great environment. And then, you know, the events and people you bring in. I mean, there's all kinds of different things that appeal to a ton of different people, but it's always interesting. And if people start associating good beer with a cool environment, a good time, you know, there's not people in there that, you know, drink 10 beers and want to fight, you know, there's no baloney, right? So, and that all goes into building brands that are fun. I mean, you look at what's happened to Nike, they lost their edge with athletes and performance, and they hired a CEO and who I'm sure did what he was told. You know, he went totally digital, built the hell out of their e-com business, but kind of abandoned retailers and kind of dumbed down the performance edge, right? I'm an old basketball player. I'm not LeBron or Michael Jordan, but damn, I want to wear shoes associated with winning, right? And performance. Yep.
Well, it is a fun, take it from me, because I'm there frequently, whether it's for work or not. It is an extremely fun environment. It's an effortless environment, in terms of the folks are at all the tap rooms. The folks are genuine. It has been an organic community building process.
You know, I think that's, and I appreciate that, because that's exactly, each one has its own personality and has really taken on the personality of the people that work there, which is, it's really fascinating in its way, because they are all very, they're similar in many respects, but they're also each individual and unique.
The other thing, Mike, that, you know, Chris can articulate certainly better than me, because he's the founder and he's the boss. One of the things that we see with lots of, you know, small challenger emerging brands is they either lack funding, or they're so determined in their one little niche or the cause they're supporting, which is all great. But if they can't sell at a high enough velocity in a retailer, they're going to get dropped. You know, there's all kinds of theme-based brands or cause-driven, and some of them, a lot of consumers will tell you, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I'll pay an extra 10 cents a pound for coffee that helps the farmer. And then it comes showtime in the aisle at Kroger, and they're like, nah, I'm not paying an extra 10 cents a pound.
Well, that's the trouble. That's the trouble with surveys, right? Surveys, everybody lies. Oh, yeah. I definitely buy that. If you do that, I'm behind you 100%. Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, Tracy and I see a lot is we see that, you know, founders' expansion plans or this or that, there's more resilience in their plan than in their bank account. And, you know, sadly, you know, money's kind of the gas and oil that runs the machine. You need a good product. You need a good team. But you got to have some dough to get the word out, or you have to have super deep pockets where you're like, you know what, this takes me 10 years, so be it. Not a lot of people that are entrepreneurs and successful are used to lighting money on fire and just waiting and waiting and waiting.
No. They're very definitely used to lighting money on fire. The waiting part's the hard one. They want immediate turnaround. You know, I light it on fire and I want the fireman to come in with the fire extinguisher and take me out.
Well, Chris, Tom Petty said the waiting is the hardest part, Chris.
Exactly.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the financing of a business, the raising money, and even the committing your own money and loans. I have done all of the above to build my brands. I have been an owner in broadcast 100% from the year 2000. And prior to that, in 1995, I had my first opportunity to be a part owner. Our CEO at the time probably shouldn't have told me how much money we had in the bank, because I went on an aggressive expansion plan that succeeded. We built an incredible brand, over the next 3 years, and we were poised to continue to grow, but a larger brand, discovered us and made us an offer that we couldn't refuse. So we ended up selling after only 3 years.
That's everybody's dream, right? Even if you don't want to sell, you want somebody to want you.
Yeah. Well, and it was a courtship that just couldn't be ignored. After a while, we were an employee owned company. There were 13 of us, and it just eventually it got to the point where it was to benefit the shareholders. We could not pass up this offer. It would not have been part of the fiduciary responsibility to ignore their offers again and again and again. But getting started and then pivoting, and everybody has checks and we all went our separate ways. I put mine into my own business, and maybe that wasn't the smartest thing. I took 100% of the check that I received and put it right back into another business.
That's burning the ships, baby. That's what they did with the Trojan War. It's like, guys, you're fighting your way home. You don't have any choices.
That's what
Elon Musk did. Didn't he take all his money out of PayPal or whatever he did and put it into Tesla or whatever his next adventure was? He was not uncommitted.
And that was it for me. But for brands like Three Roads and for other businesses, Chris, what's your advice as far as the financing of a business or raising money or committing your own money?
Money is very difficult to raise. You're going to find friends and family close by. I mean, the difficulty, what I wanted and what's important to me is I didn't want to, you can't do this stuff by committee. It's nice to have people to help you, bounce things off of, et cetera. But, ultimately I don't play well with others in that regard. And so but we've got 50 or 60 investors, small investors. We wanted local ownership. It's 100% privately owned. I mean, I've funded the vast majority of it. And, all of our employees or most of our employees have some ownership. And so that's the important part to me. And, you just got to be cautious as you expand. You can't just spend money willy-nilly. And there is a tendency, if people raise money from outside and are able to do that successfully, I think that you become, it's kind of like you were talking about, if you know how much is in the bank account, you can get silly. You can get a little careless.
So if I may, Mike, Chris's example with him as the primary funder and founder and the guy who can call the shots is really important because, On our podcast, we've interviewed some investment bankers and investors about what they look for, right? So this is whether it's the latest protein bar, Three Roads or a medicine. You can go to friends and family, which is risky, but at least they know you and they'll know that, Chris works hard. And even if it doesn't make it, it's not because he mailed it in. But to be perfectly honest, we've heard stories that leads to some uncomfortable family dynamics because mm-hmm. Uncle Frank might have given you 25 grand. And to him, that is a ton of money. And if you go under, you might get sideways looks for the next three Thanksgivings. There's places like Kickstarter where you can fund. There are places like a group called Kick Further, which fund inventory if you have POs. So that helps you manage your cash flow. They're a very interesting place. Then if you get a little bit bigger, there's all kinds of investment firms that deal with angel funding, venture funding, one thing, we just had a woman founder on. She said, the worst thing I ever did was take any money because I didn't take much, but now I have a voice at the table and they ask me a ton of questions. So she said, if I did it again, I would either take no money or I'd take more because to just take a little,
And you still got
depending
those,
on,
still got the voice at the door, but you don't have the amount of money. What I've found in my real business life that is that this it's usually the small investor that makes the most noise. The bigger guys, you know, if you got the guy that puts $1 million into a business, he is like, okay, you know, I understand the business, you know, and I'm not going to bother these guys. It's the guy that's got 50,000 in it that says, you know, asking questions every time that you spend an undue amount of time with. You know, I think that the ability to make your own decisions and the like, and then if you're going to take money, I think what your person was saying is exactly right. Go big.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
There are a number. I've had conversations with a number of these crowdfunding type places that, you know, are pushing into the beverage space, and so there is a potential opportunity there. I don't know if you guys are aware of or familiar with Island Brands. They're out of Charleston, South Carolina, and they were pushing that they raised $5 or $6 million through one of these Kickstarter type campaigns, and have used that to you know expand up and down the East Coast. I think they're doing well. I think they got themselves a $5 or $6 million war chest, and that's probably enough to make a big difference.
Yeah, a couple of other things here, Mike, about taking money from people. We interviewed a woman, her episode is not posted yet. Her name is Teddy Townsend, and she's with CG Sawaya Partners, a pretty big consumer packaged goods investment bank up in New York. And Teddy said one of the big things that emerging brands make a mistake is the capital they take, there's not alignment on the goal, right? Right. Some people want to run a brand and turn it over to their grandchildren. Other people, most people want to give you money and get a return in a certain period of time. And that's right. why they want
to build it and sell it. I mean, that's the only way you get the money out of it, right? So that's
Or they at least want Chris to buy out, you know, Mike, the minority shareholder, so they can go do something else.
Right.
So that was a really interesting point she talked about. And then the two other things, and Chris touched on this a bit, is when you take capital, I'm going to oversimplify, there's really two buckets, right? There's the people who can just write the check. And like Chris said, they're sort of sophisticated. They know they're taking a risk. They might know the business. They'll ask some questions, but they'll be calm, maybe. The other type of money you can take is value added capital, where let's project into Chris's world here for a second. Maybe it's someone who has a really good distributor business into, say, Wawa, and they want to invest some money. You know, so they bring more to the table for Chris and his firm than just cash. They bring some access, or at least potential access, into Wawa, which could be helpful to Chris as he tries to project out his concentric circles. So, you know, having value-added capital and some of these other consumer packaged goods businesses, Mike, that's important, is finding people that might be really well connected at Walmart, or they really know digital marketing, or they know how to sell on Amazon. So you know, these are the things you need to weigh. Can if I invest with Chris is thinking, what does Bruce bring to the table that's actually helpful to me aside from a check?
Absolutely. And the experience and the knowledge and the connections that you could bring to that as well is literally invaluable. We're talking with Bruce Montgomery from Road to Retail, Chris Sadler, founder of Three Road Brewing, on The Mike Show. Went a little longer than 10 minutes.
Yes, it did. We should do this again. There's other things that we can talk about.
This was a tremendous introduction to an incredible brand, one that I believe in wholeheartedly. And you can find us there each week. At either Three Roads in Lynchburg or Three Roads at Farmville, Ballad Brewing down in Danville, which we haven't touched on, but we will in let's say part two. We'll talk on Ballad Brewing as well. Bruce and Chris, final thoughts.
Well, Mike, thanks for having us on. I always enjoy spending time with Chris talking about Three Roads. I'm a big fan of what he and his folks are building, and I always bring a knife and fork for my N150. That baby is a meal. If anyone wants to learn more about what we're doing, our podcast, Road, the number 2 Retail, it's out on all Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the website, www.road2retail.com. You know, We'd love to help. Love small emerging challenger brands. Entrepreneurs intrigue me because most of them are all gas, no break.
Well, thanks a lot for having Mike. This is fun. And
absolutely. Well,
I'd like the opportunity to talk about our beer, and always good to hear what Bruce is thinking about, because he's got the. It's fascinating to me how much talent we have in Lynchburg. I mean, it's a hell of a town.
Likewise. I agree wholeheartedly. Check out Three Roads. You can visit the tap rooms, 1300 Court Street in downtown Lynchburg, and Farmville as well. And again, Ballad Brewing down in Danville. Go to the number 3roadsbrewing.com for more information and follow their social media. Guys, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And looking forward to talking with you again soon.
Awesome.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks. See you, Chris.
See you, Bruce.
It is the Mike Show. Coming up a little bit later on, we have your audio vault. Stay tuned.